All right, guys, it's time for the Next Level Guy Show, a men's interview, interest, and improvement-focused podcast featuring interviews with the greats from all industries to help you better your life. Each week, a new episode features an interview with one of the greats, covering all aspects of their story, from life hacks to tips and protocols that have allowed them to live life on the next level. We then highlight concrete action steps that you can use to improve your life. And now, your host, Ian Dawson McKay.
And today's guest is Nick Hutchinson. Nick stands as a visionary force behind Book Thinkers, a growing seven-figure marketing agency that seamlessly bridges the worlds of authors and readers. In just over 7 years, he's organically built a platform that reaches over 1 million people each month. Nick's podcast, Book Thinkers, Life-Changing Books, is a global top 2% show that features captivating interviews with world-class authors such as Grant Cardone, Lewis Howes, and Alex Hormozi. Through the use of his platform, Nick has helped hundreds of authors expand their reach to hundreds of millions of readers and drive significant revenue growth as part of their book campaigns. His expansive services include short-form video production, podcast booking, and social media brand building. Now Nick has dedicated his life to helping millions of readers take action on the information they learn and rise to their potential through his books, speaking, and personal brand as a whole. This was the inspiration for his new book, Rise of the Reader, where he dives into the strategies for mastering your reading habits and applying what you learn. And in this interview, we discuss the power of books, his new book, Rise of the Reader, how you can reduce the learning curve for success through reading, and how you can level up your life right now with a book, and so much more. And now, let's get to the interview. Thank you so much for coming on the show. Absolute pleasure to have you. Follow your podcast regularly. I can show you my cast box. For those who maybe don't recognize your name, how would you introduce yourself?
Sure. Well, my name is Nick Hutchison. I am the founder of a company called Book Thinkers that helps authors promote and market their books. We have a podcast where I'm grateful to interview some of the world's best nonfiction authors in the worlds of personal development, health and fitness, personal finance, investing, mindset, happiness, and all of those subjects. And I just put out my very first book, Rise of the Reader, Strategies for Mastering Your Reading Habits and Applying What You Learn. I'm located in the Boston, Massachusetts area, and I love all things related to life. I mean, I read hundreds and hundreds of books, and I just can't satisfy this curiosity of mine.
Oh, great answer, because that is something we were talking about just before we started. Was I buy a lot of books, I read a lot of books, but I don't know how to apply them to my life, and that's why I love your new book, Rise of the Reader, because you're not just saying read more, you're actually saying here's what to do with it, here's how to actually improve your life with it. Because you mentioned in the book that 50% of adults have not finished a book in the last year. Why do you think we kind of die off reading books after school? Why is it because we're forced to at school? But surely there's nothing better than sitting down with a hard book and just getting lost in fantasy land. Why do you think we stop reading?
Yeah, two things come to mind immediately when you ask me the question. Number one is what you highlighted. When we grow up in the traditional public education systems that exist today, we're taught to read things, we're forced to read things that don't interest us, and then we're quizzed and penalized if we don't think the same way that the teacher does. So that creates a distrust with these physical books sometimes. I mean, I know that happened for me at least. When I was growing up, I had this sense of curiosity, but I was constantly penalized for not reading and thinking the same way that my teachers did. So I think that's one thing that comes to mind that we could fix in the education system. The other thing that comes to mind is in today's world, we have instant gratification, constant cycles of dopamine just hitting our brain over and over and over again with social media. So we can open up Instagram or TikTok or YouTube and we could see one new video every 10 seconds. on any subject that we want. In fact, it's optimized for subjects that bring us excitement, that create an emotional reaction. Whereas a book is a longer investment. You have to delay gratification sometimes. You have to think about your future self, not your present self, when you dive into some of these books. And so they're not as fun. They don't bring your brain as much short-term excitement.
So what do you think is the sort of the power of the book then? Is it the, because you've said in the book that the right book at the right time can change your life. And for you, I think it was the 4-hour work week initially that kind of initially created that spark. But how, if you're a guy sort of listening to this and going, okay, I do read some good books. What is it about the power of a book, do you think? Is it just we need to find that one spark, that one book that sets us off, you know? How can we start this reading journey if you haven't picked up a book since school?
I would think about starting your reading journey through this lens. Books solve problems. If you're dealing with a problem on a daily basis, you might think it's unique to you, but chances are somebody else has figured out how to solve that problem. I mean, about 100 billion people have lived before us. Millions of them have written books, and thousands of those books probably detail somebody overcoming the same problem that you're currently trying to fix. Now, here's the scary part. If you don't address the problem that you're facing on a daily basis, whatever it is, it could be health or fitness, it could be related to your happiness, your personal finances, it doesn't matter. Over the next 30 years, so 365 times 30, you'll deal with that problem almost 11,000 times. So instead of trying to fix the problem yourself, shortcut it. Somebody else has documented what might have taken them decades, and you can read it in days, and you can solve that problem and live a better life. So that's how I think about starting these books. You can solve problems in just about any area of your life for $20 and a few hours of your time. And social media videos don't do that, right? Mm. Books do that.
Because that comes across in the about how you can pay £20 and have so many life-changing prompts, thoughts, ideas, and questions every page. Whereas, you know, instead of buying a conference, instead of buying this or a car or like a trip around the world, you can completely change your life with one book. But you didn't initially start reading. And I believe you, was it an internship? You just kind of needed a bit more excitement in your life. Why? What was it missing at that point, do you think? And what led that initial, right, that's it, I'm going to go buy a book? Was it just to pass the time or more?
No, it was a few things. I took this internship going into my senior year of college or university, whatever you want to call it. And my boss at the time, Kyle, I think he recognized some unfulfilled potential in me, right? I was this 20-year-old sort of know-it-all, sometimes arrogant, little bit of ego. But clearly, I had a lot of room to grow and improve. And so Kyle started to take me on some local sales trips, and he would put on podcasts in the car, business podcasts. I mean, that was my first time ever listening to a podcast conversation before, right? I would normally just listen to music. And I was commuting 1 hour each way, 5 days a week to this internship during that summer. So that was 10 hours a week in the car, and I was just listening to music. And so Kyle basically said to me, hey, Nick, listening to the same song or the same playlist, right, the same music for the 300th time, it's not going to help you improve your life. It's not going to get you closer to where you want to be. Mm-hmm. If you want to step into this company and be powerful and make a lot of money, you have to improve your skill sets. Music's not going to do that for you, but the right podcast might. So I started listening to podcasts. I mean, about all sorts of different subjects. And over time, right, I'm spending a lot of time in the car. Over time, I'm realizing that so many of the successful people being interviewed, they're giving at least some credit for their success to the books that they're reading. And I heard the same titles over and over and over again. Rich Dad, Poor Dad by Robert Kiyosaki. The Richest Man in Babylon by George S. Clason. The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People by Stephen Covey. And I'm just realizing over time, like, if all of these successful people that I want to be like, at least at the time, financially successful people, were all reading the same books and I'm not willing to read them, well, then I'm choosing to live under my own potential. And like, I don't know. There was something about it. I was like, I have to just go see what this is all about.
Because I really like that in the book, how you
always refer to different books and how you show that the ideas that you're kind of using as your basis for transformation are kind of linked across them. What was it about the 4-hour work week that kind of resonated with you so much that you even got it, like, sort of key messages from that book tattooed across your body, you know, above your heart, above and your wrist? And what was it that initial spark, do you think? What made that first book that kind of wow? Was it the way Tim wrote, or was it something deeper, do you think, that it, because you talked about getting over your social anxiety by selling door to door, and then you read about how to eliminate that further and further. But what was it about the 4-hour work week that just, that was it, the igniting point for you?
Well, it addressed some major things that I had always been uncomfortable with. So number one, growing up in the traditional U.S. public education system, you're always taught that failure is a bad thing. And so every time you deviate away from the expected answer, you're penalized for it. And so you're taught to fall in line. You're taught to be a good soldier. You're taught to stand at your place in the conveyor belt and do your little widgets or whatever and keep moving on. And so I always felt like a little bit of a rebellious nature to that idea. And it always created a level of discomfort. Like, I would do anything I could to break those rules, but still pass. So for instance, I took a calculus class when I was in high school, and they told me that homework only accounted for 10% of the grade. So I was like, well, I can still pass this class pretty easily. Even if I don't do super well on my exams, I can still pass with a 0% homework average. So I never did my homework. You know, so it was always like this rebellious nature of like, I don't want to be told what to do. And then finally, I read this book, The 4-Hour Work Week, where Tim Ferriss gives voice to this. And he says, hey, society has a box. It has a set of expectations. And when you deviate outside of the box, everybody out there will judge you and they'll kind of force you back in. But you don't have to live that way. And it was the first time anybody in my life had ever said, hey, I think I know why you are uncomfortable. Like, you're a little bit rebellious. You don't think the same way that everybody else does. And that's okay. You can design a life that's fulfilling to you. And here's how I did it. And I'm like, okay, this is my superhero now because he did what I want to do. And he's helping other people get there. That's the definition of a perfect mentor. So that was kind of like number one. And then number two was that I was working a standard 9-to-5 job in a cubicle. I was location dependent. So even though I was starting to work in the world of sales and entrepreneurship a little bit, I still wasn't free. And so it's the same idea as the traditional school system penalizing you. It's like your boss can penalize you and has control over you too. And so Tim was like, here's how you can build a business. Here's how it can be location independent. Here's how you can travel the world and only do things that you enjoy. And I was like, that's what I want. And that's what I went after. And that's what I've been able to build. So over the last, like, whatever, 8 years or so. So that's those are some of the reasons.
No, it's because I was the same with his book. I mean, it was the first book that kind of highlighted you are going to die. I think we all kind of assume that, we can work, we can save, and we can do the things we want to do later in life. And, you know, it's about mini retirements, and you suddenly think, you can do this now. You don't need to wait till potentially you could be dead by the time you get to retirement age. You could not have the money, you could not have the facilities, you could not have the mobility. And I think that was the first book I was kind of like, whoa. And that put me on a kind of similar journey, not a successful one, but because you mentioned in the book about how people read for entertainment, but not also for, like, evolvement, you know, how they don't do, where is it you said, they don't do as much for education, but they do as much for entertainment. And you talk about the intention to read a book, etc. But how would you get somebody to stop and say, what's wrong with me now, to know the kind of books or the kind of topics to look at? Or is it just read more to kind of find the thing that resonates with you more?
I think if you're just starting out and you're brand new to this world of personal development, you can read with some intention. But I do think, like you're sort of highlighting, quantity matters more than quality when you're first starting. So read everything. Read about every different subject that you're interested in. read about health and fitness, read about personal finance and business, read about mindset, read about meditate, read about anything, business, whatever. And over time, you'll start to understand this entire landscape of personal development, and you'll get a solid foundation for what you need to work on. Because as you're reading, you're cultivating more of a sense of awareness, I think. So over time, it shifts from quantity to quality. Once you have a good understanding of what you need to work on and your place in the world and what human beings are capable of doing in the first place, what industries exist, then you can start to target, okay, here are the problems that are holding me back. That takes a base level of awareness that I don't think most people have. There's a great analogy in the beginning of a book called The Mastery of Self by Don Miguel Ruiz Jr. And he says, imagine you're at a party. You just wake up, you're at a party, and everybody in this party is drunk. You're the only sober one there. And they're swinging from one end of the emotional spectrum to the other. They're totally oblivious of what's going on, but they just keep drinking the poison. They're totally unaware, but you are aware. It's like, that's how I felt when I first started reading personal development books. It's like, how does nobody else pay attention to this stuff? The world's best people in every single industry that's ever existed, they've all condensed their greatest life lessons into books, and we can buy the books for £20 or $20. It doesn't make sense. Why aren't more people aware of this? But it does take like some type of base level of awareness, I think. I keep using that word awareness, before you can really start to set intentions.
So if you took somebody now who starts, I mean, cause when I first started, I was fed up with friends going to the, I was sitting in a bar going, I don't want to be here, but I wanted more from life. But I didn't, I was afraid of being the outset person. And eventually I kind of just had to be the outlier and sit and read and create a podcast and be that strange guy that doesn't go to the bars. And I realized that there are more and more people, and then you find these experts, the mentors, the books you can buy. But how do you start making reading a kind of lifestyle habit? In that first instance, would you get them just to read without taking notes? Because you talk a great amount about intention and revisiting your intentions and bookmarking your days and things like that, but how do you get them just to enjoy reading again? Is it picking up fiction? Is it kind of just like you're saying, reading anything and anything, and just if it's not enjoyable, pick up the next book? What kind of initial to get over the I don't want to sit down and read. You know how, because we're all dopamine hunting. How do we get back into sitting and enjoying the journey of a book?
There are a couple of places that I'd recommend people start. Number one, you can read fiction, right? Fiction is much larger in terms of the number of books sold for a reason. People love to escape. They love to read about other worlds. And I think that that's great. The other place that you can start, and this is a great one for people who they're interested in like business and nonfiction and health and those things, but they don't know where to start. I say read biographies, books written about your favorite people, people that you want to learn more about, because they sort of read like fiction, like you're reading a story. It kind of plays like a movie in your head. So you get the best of both worlds, but you're also learning about what real human beings did and about how great you can actually be when you apply yourself. And I think that's another great place to start. So if somebody is a really big fan of a certain sports player, or they're a really big fan of a certain entrepreneur, there are books written about those people. And that's a great way to stick with the reading habit, because you're excited and you kind of know the content, but at the same time, you're learning about human potential.
Because throughout the book, you mention and refer to a lot of great books, a lot of great writers, a lot of great ideas through it. And it's a kind of who's who of the top books. But there's also some sort of, oh, I didn't know that one. I'm going to have to go buy that. I'll have to read up on these. You know, because it really gets, as somebody who reads a lot, I go, oh, all right, I want to check that. But for somebody starting out, were there kind of readers or types of books that you think we should all check out first? You know, like Tim Ferriss, Gary Vaynerchuk, you know, like Nicholas Lavery, these kind of people who, obviously your book now, but what books do you think are kind of go-tos like Rich Dad, Poor Dad, 4-Hour Work Week. What are books we should all check out regardless of where we're starting from?
Yeah, I think very basic books in every area of personal development or thinking can be essential. So Rich Dad, Poor Dad by Robert Kiyosaki is a great place to start for everybody because it teaches the importance of financial literacy. And you don't need to love money in order to see the value in money, right? We're all forced to play the game. We need to exchange money in some way, shape, or form for food, water, shelter. And here's the other thing. The more money you have, the more people you can help. You can be of service to more people. And so a book like Rich Dad, Poor Dad, I think every person on the planet should read that book. I love The Compound Effect by Darren Hardy because it shows you that small steps in the right direction repeated over a very long period of time will lead to disproportionately positive outcomes. Another way of saying that is that you don't have to take these big, scary leaps to become successful. You can eat an elephant in one bite at a time. No matter how many times you read Aesop's fable, The Tortoise and the Hare, the tortoise always wins, slow and steady. And so for me, that book teaches 1% improvements in every area of your life. That's the magic sauce. So it's not intimidating. It gets you to take better action. I recommend too, like you said, The 4-Hour Work Week by Tim Ferriss. I think everybody should read that book because one of the core messages is that everybody is capable of designing a life that's fulfilling to them. You don't have to work a job that you hate. You don't have to be in pain every day. You don't have to be in debt. You can be happy, healthy, and wealthy. All of us can be that way. And Tim sort of shows you how he did it so you know it's possible. And then he gives you the mechanics to do it in your own life.
Because in your book, you talk about reading with intention, about the emotional, the deeper emotional intention that you have for something. And you give an example about how to set smart goals and how you found an area of your life you wanted to change and you did it. And I suddenly thought, I can't remember the last time I picked up a book because of a reason. I just picked up a book because I wanted to read. And it was kind of like, oh, I don't know if I do read with intention like that. So if somebody's reading a book just now and thinks, okay, I'm reading and I want to know about personal finance, I pick up, you know, like Rich Dad, Poor Dad, for example, how would they start writing it with intention? How would they start using that philosophy when they approach a book rather than just passing time? They actually want to get some education from it.
Yeah, I'll give a quick background story on this. So I started to attend conferences, like personal development type conferences, and I would go to these things and I would meet people and I would say, hey, why are you here? Like, what can I help you with? And they'd say, well, I don't know. I'm just kind of here to take notes and learn and improve my life. And it's like, people were just showing up. They were spending time and they were spending money and that there was no specificity. They didn't even know why they were there. And then I started to realize the same thing happens with books. Like, just like you said, most of us, and by the way, this happened to me for a very long time. You just pick up books. Like, you see them on Amazon and you buy them, or you see them on Instagram and you buy them, or a friend gifts it to you and so you use it. But instead, if you start by setting an intention, like I'm looking to improve my personal finances. So you look up the best personal finance books because you're tired of living with debt and barely making your credit card payments and impulsively spending. And you're just like, I want to get it under control. So you go on Amazon or whatever, and you find Rich Dad, Poor Dad, to use your example. When I get the book, I love to read the front cover, read the back cover, maybe the introduction, and I get a good sense as to what the book is about. Normally, the author is going to tell you what you're going to learn and what they're going to teach you. So in the case of Rich Dad, Poor Dad, maybe I would set an intention like this. Find and implement at least 2 new financial management strategies or ways of thinking about money by the end of November. And that way, or December, or in December all of a sudden. So that way, you know, you write that intention on the inside cover of the book. Find and implement at least 2 new money mindsets by the end of December. Mindset is a little bit tough because it's a little bit less of an action, but you're looking for 2 kind of aha moments in the book that you can start to think about and repeat and start to live. So write it on the inside cover. And every time you read another chapter of the book, revisit that intention. find and implement at least 2 new money mindsets by the end of December. And eventually they'll just jump off the page to you because you're filtering for them all of a sudden. It's almost like you're sharing your goal with the book so that the book can share that information back with you. You'll just see it bright as day. Like, that's a money mindset I wish I had, such as poor people work for money and rich people have money work for them. That's a money mindset that's in Rich Dad, Poor Dad that you should start to adopt. Okay, I'm going to circle that. Maybe that's something I want to implement. At the end of the book, maybe you see 10 different money mindsets that you could implement. That's a lot. You're only looking for 2. So which 2 have the power to change your life? Which 2 brought the most like aha moment? Which 2 are so different from how you currently think that you think? If you just start to repeat them on a daily basis, like a mantra or like an affirmation, you'll start to believe them and it could change everything for you. That's how you choose to implement a book like Rich Dad, Poor Dad, in my opinion.
Oh, because how many times have we read a book, gone, that is the most life-changing piece of advice? 2 days later, you're like, what was it again? And
yeah.
And I find that amazing that people don't use like Evernote and have like ways to kind of like mind map and all these sorts of things. And people kind of go, yeah, I read it. It was great. But I can't remember anything about it. I can't even remember a quote about it. So how do you then... Because you talk about using your RAS in the book. You talk about using these kind of like paradigm shifts and new ways of looking. And you give great examples from your own personal life to tips from the book and then how to then go and take it forward, a concrete step. So how would you start with a book to start taking notes, to find the key points, but then to understand to then use it with intention, not just to kind of collate and consume, but to actually use?
You know, one of my favorite quotes, I wish I put it in the book, but the book was written before I discovered the quote. It's from Napoleon Hill. And it says, action is the real measure of intelligence. Action. Action is what separates you implementing a book and you just consuming a book, right? That's the missing piece. You need to take action on what you learn. Action is what creates real world results. So when I'm reading through a book, I love to set that intention. Like I said, in the intention piece, the SMART goal, right? Specific, measurable, attainable, written and relevant, time bound, you know, why is it going to change your life? That type of thing. You write it on the inside cover. That has action baked into it because you're looking to create a result. You're looking to change something. So as you're reading through the book, I recommend these days, you know, I didn't always do it like this, but these days I only take notes. I only circle page numbers and highlight stuff and take notes on information that I could take action on. Because I used to think like, oh, that quote is interesting. But you can't take action on a quote. Action is the real measure of intelligence, Napoleon Hill. Useful, but like can't really take action on it, right? But putting money to work for you while you sleep using the strategies in Rich Dad, Poor Dad, you could take action on that. So that's, I think, a little bit more important. So as you're taking notes, you know, at the end of the reading experience, like I mentioned before, you might have 10 or 15 different things that you could choose to implement, right? These are action items that you found in the book that the author used to create the same outcome you're looking for. And so not every action is created equal. I don't think you should take action on everything that the author recommends because sometimes that's unrealistic and it creates procrastination, you know, right? It's like eating an elephant in one bite instead of one bite at a time. So what I do nowadays is I'll write down those 10 or 15 things that I found in the book. I'll rewrite them because repetition leads to retention. You can form a better relationship with something, not only reading it once, but going back through, reading it a second time and rewriting it on a piece of paper and then choosing, okay, what 2 or 3 things do I want to implement here? And then putting them in your online Evernote notebook, which is what I talk about doing in the book. And then even putting them again into your activity tracker and setting a goal around taking action on them. So this is like my whole universe of taking action on the books that I'm reading. And I'll kind of wrap up my rant here with one other point of context, which is that I used to optimize for like reading a certain number of books. Right at first, it was a book every 2 weeks, 26 books a year. Then it was a book every week for a while. 52 books a year. There were years where I read over 100 books, right? So 2 books a week. And I was just sort of checking boxes, right? Like you're talking about, circling stuff, taking notes, but not choosing to take action on it. And I realized that I was moving too fast. I was trying to take too much from each book. I was like hoarding the notes. But I realized I would have been better off if I had just implemented one thing from each book instead. So now that's what I really optimize for. Like the basic minimum activity is just implement one thing from each book that you read. Really try it out. The best piece of advice from each author. And I think that's a, you know, that's leveraging action instead of just information. And I think that's created a lot more momentum in my life.
Because that really hit home. And like, I was reading it, I was kind of like, yeah, I do the first two sections. I get the book, I take the notes, and then I stop. And you talk about how being able to fail is such a key thing to do. You know, that we're taught you can't fail, you can't show weakness, but we need to really start moving and doing things in life. So how have you found the key kind of people you've spoken to? I mean, you've had the who's who of guests. How have they kind of addressed failing, getting over the embarrassment, getting over weakness of making mistakes, of things going wrong? You know, in your own personal journey, how have you learned to kind of get over that initial inertia of, whoa, no, let's not make a mistake. That might be an ego. That might be our masculine. How do we get over the guy of, look, my ego might take a hit, but I need to do this to be a better person, to be a better version of myself?
Yeah, I've studied a lot of stoicism over the last few years, and stoicism helps you deal with ego in a really healthy way. You know, I read Ego is the Enemy by Ryan Holiday. I read a book one time called Rethinking Narcissism, which was all about ego representing itself in a negative way. I've read a lot of Eastern philosophy, like Buddhism type thinking, you know, and a lot of different religious and spiritual texts, books on awareness. Really trying to get to the bottom of this whole ego thing, because it really did stand in my way for a long time. And I think I've realized that, you know, I've heard it said this way, a good day for the soul is a bad day for the ego, or something like that. And it's the idea that, you know, when you are of service to other people and you are putting good karma out into the universe, it's not always so good for your ego. Sometimes you need to step aside. You need to give other people credit. You need to accept that you don't know everything. And it's a humbling experience. Nowadays, you know, I'm still always battling with my ego in one way, shape, or form. But I really do try to get out of the way and just do what's best for everybody in every circumstance. And that creates more awareness. And I'll tell you what, it takes more logic and less emotion. One of the biggest differences between me today and me a number of years ago is that I have more time to process inputs to my brain. Back to that word awareness. I used to just emotionally react from a place of ego every time something happened in my life. It was just like an automatic response. I think the masculine side of me who desired control and would get a little bit aggressive, like it was just an automated response. But through all of the meditation, the mindfulness, the reading, the thinking, the journaling, all of it, now when there's an input to my brain, I can bypass the initial emotional response. It's sort of like subdued. I can process from a point of logic instead of emotion. And then I can react with more precision. Like I have more control over my reactions these days. I think a lot about that, those kinds of subjects. And again, it's just a product of doing all of this work and improving emotional intelligence.
It's time for a quick break. There are millions of potential products to buy, so how do you know which ones are worth your hard-earned money? Simple. You go to nextlevelguy.com/affiliates. And explore those that will transform and improve your life. You'll find deals, listener exclusives, and special offers with some great companies. Recommendations are 100% honest and only on items Ian has tried or believes in. The companies showcased will make you a better man in all areas of your life. Simply go to nextlevelguy.com/affiliates and level up.
Because that's the thing, isn't it? As soon as you feel what, people go, oh, no. Well, I'm not touching that. And I like in the book where you talk about the future me versus the current me. I mean, I do that now. I sometimes think, what am I doing now that's going to benefit me later on? I might not see the benefit now, but or what should I be doing now to live the life that I want later on? And I think you mentioned in the book about how we create our own resistance. It's not real. It's in our head. Is it just throwing ourselves into as many different things to trial to overcome that ego to get to that level you're at, do you think? Is it through repetition or is it quality effort over quantity of effort? What's your opinion on those sorts of areas?
Yeah, there are so many different variables. I think as far as the failure ego piece for me, realizing that all of the world's most successful people fail and they fail constantly. I mean, think about Elon Musk with SpaceX. You know, he had 3 failed rocket attempts before his 4th one was successful. He spent $100 million and employed hundreds of people and had no success for years and years and years, was laughed at in every area of the media. Now he's the richest man on the planet. And that, by the way, that story reigns true for literally every single person that we think about as successful. And the people that have the most positive impact, they all constantly fail. And so eventually you realize failure is part of the process. Failure teaches you how to become better. It gives you data. It just is what it is. Like if you expect it, it doesn't surprise you. And so that helped me in a big way. I just started to expect failure. As far as like thinking about future self, I think it was Jordan Peterson too, say something like this one time. He was like, you know, there are an infinite number of future versions of you. Like they all exist out there somewhere. But every single day when you make a decision, you're narrowing the list a little bit, right? Like if you choose not to get up and exercise today or record a podcast today or eat healthy today, like you're crossing off a bunch of future versions of you that aren't going to exist anymore because you decided not to feed them. So you always want to feed the positive. Like I think about James Clear, every action you take today is a vote for the person you're becoming tomorrow. No single vote matters that much, but like as they accumulate over time, they really do. And so we have control over the person we're going to be in 5 years. They're being made today by the choices that we make today. Every single habit is creating a different person in the future. And so, yeah, I try to really think about that a lot. Like, is Nick in 5 years going to be happy that he did this podcast? Yes, he is. It's such a better use of my time than sitting there scrolling on social media, right? So that's kind of, I'm always thinking about like, is Nick in 5 years going to be happy that he's doing this stuff?
I love the way you look at things because I remember when, I can't remember which book I got it from, but I remember somebody saying, imagine you do die and there is a God, there is a heaven, whatever your kind of, your outlay of it would be. And his idea of hell was going and meeting the person that he could have been or meeting versions of him that was possible if they'd taken these opportunities. And that scared the shit out of me, basically, that I was living a life to try to appease other people or fit in. And I wasn't living to be who or what I was meant to be. And it terrified me. And I love how you've got reminders of that you will die, that of these kind of teachings that you've learned. You've mentioned about your activity trackers. How do we then take these ideas and then start using them? You know, say if we read for our work week and we take one key thing from it. I know you outlined it great in the book, but as a kind of teaser, how do we use these activity trackers to start bettering our lives?
Yeah, Peter Drucker, who's a legendary management guru, he's a thinker. He would always say, what's not being measured can't be managed. So we need a place to measure our activity. We need to understand our baseline of activity. And if we choose to implement something, we need to know whether or not it actually creates a positive change for us. That's step number one. Because without that, what's the point of doing anything? You need certainty. Certainty creates momentum and it gives us positive feelings. And so I built this activity tracker that's available to anybody that buys the book. I put a link to a copy of it in there. And this activity tracker measures your activity on a weekly basis. You can set a goal like, hey, I want to try this thing out twice this week. And as you work throughout the week, you can put in all sorts of things related to health and fitness and personal finance and your goals in your business or your podcast or whatever. And as you read things from books, you're like, hey, I want to take action on Tim's idea of automating, delegating, or eliminating low impact activities. Great. Put that in the activity tracker as delegate something this week. Try it out. Hire a virtual assistant this week, whatever it's going to be. And then set a goal of one. And now that's kind of one piece to the puzzle is you need a place to keep it measured. The other thing that I have found very helpful is building an accountability group with some motivated people in your life, meeting with them on a weekly basis and reviewing your activity tracker with them. And you could say, hey, I read this great thing in the 4-hour work week. I'm going to hire a virtual assistant this week on Upwork or some other website. And I'm going to try to delegate something to them because I want to create more time in my life and I don't want to do this admin stuff anymore. Tim told me I could do it. Tell your group. And the next week when you show up, you say, hey, I failed and I need help. I need you guys to hold me accountable. I want to try it again this week. Make sure by Monday afternoon I signed up for Upwork or whatever it is. Or you show up and you say, hey, I tried this out. It was way easier than I thought. I don't know why I'd never tried this before. Now I'm going to set a new goal for this week to delegate 10 more things on my calendar, right? And so having that accountability group as a place to share your ideas and build momentum is really important. And then having the activity tracker as a place for your whole team, all of your buddies to see what you're working on and for you to measure your activity, I think that's the other piece to the puzzle. So that's how I choose to implement the things from the books I'm reading.
Because I love how in the book you talk about your success buddies, you know, this group that you've created and how we should be creating these groups. And other people have talked about how, you know, like you have to have your tribe, you have to have your like a certain army behind you. You can't do it on your own kind of thing. How do you find the people that fit in? Because a lot of guys maybe in our positions think, I'm not the guy that goes to the club. I'm not the guy that goes out, try pool birds and all this kind of nonsense. I want to just be better in my work, be a better partner, whatever it is. How do we find these people? Because we always feel like we're the only one on this journey. How do you find, you know, how would you start building this accountability group, do you think?
Yeah, hey, I can resonate with that. I mean, I felt like I was the only one for a very long time. And that's really why my entire company exists, because I wanted to start sharing the books I was reading on social media as a way to connect with like-minded people. So number one, I would challenge everybody to look at their list of friends and say, who's typically been the most motivated? Like, has anybody run a marathon or tried to run a marathon? Does anybody go to the gym regularly? Does anybody else read books like the books I'm reading? And if you can find somebody like that, I think it's a great place to start, because that person knows you. And, you know, there's that saying, you are the average of the five people you spend the most time with. Sometimes it's important to change those five people, but sometimes you can rise with them as a group, as opposed to against them and replacing them. So call up that friend like, hey, I know a couple of years ago you ran a marathon or a half marathon. Is that something you would want to try again? Because I'm starting this accountability group and maybe I could hold you accountable to running again. Or, hey, man, I know you go to the gym pretty often. I'm starting an accountability group. Can I hold you accountable to taking your gym to the next level? And you can hold me accountable to reading. We can talk about it on a weekly basis. Maybe buy them a copy of Rise of the Reader and gift it to them and see what they think. If you don't have anybody in your life like that, which is totally fine, I recommend going to the comment section of your favorite online influencer, like let's just say David Goggins, somebody like that, who really challenges people to be a better version of themselves. If you get in the comment section, you're going to find people who are just as motivated as you are. And you can shoot them a message and say, hey, my name's Nick, and I'm reading David Goggins' book, Can't Hurt Me Again, for the third time. I would love to meet on a weekly basis and implement some of the tactics that he talks about in the book, like the accountability mirror, with some people who also love his content. Are you up for a Zoom call so I could kind of get to know you and share with you what I'm thinking? And like, if you're messaging people in communities like that, odds are they're going to be open to a call. Not everybody, maybe one out of every five people will be open to a call. But you can really meet people who have that same pre-existing desire for getting more out of life by filtering for them in the right places on the internet.
Because you get that, don't you? People say, oh, I'm scared to go to the free weight section in the gym. They're all big meatheads. And you think, they're some of the nicest people who are keen to help others and share their knowledge. And I think that's why I love your podcast, is you kind of take these expert things and you distill them down to actionable steps. And I always get something from every episode. I mean, you've had some amazing people, but you even referred to that in the book about how they're not gods, they're not superheroes. They've just taken action. They've just kept going and going. From all these amazing people you've interviewed and written about in the book, what are your key takeaways, do you think, about top performers, the one percenters, the whatever you want to call them? What makes them so unique compared to as mere mortals, if you want to call us that?
Well, just like you mentioned, they're not superheroes. They're all just people. And that, I think that was a big takeaway for me. Like, nothing is as fancy as it seems. Having spent time with a lot of these big personalities, they're just the average Joe. But what they did do was they persevered a little bit longer. You know, I think one of the big lessons so far for me has been that success and failure are the same road. It's just that the people who succeeded, they pushed a little bit farther. They navigated a few more extra obstacles. They overcame a few more flat tires, right, on this road to success. And they persevered a little bit. Like, there is no overnight success. When you think of somebody like Grant Cardone, billions of dollars, the jets, the cars, all that kind of stuff, millions of social media followers. He's in his 60s. In his late 20s, 40 years ago, 30 years ago, he was in and out of like drug rehab and alcohol rehabilitation. And then he worked for 30 years and then he became successful.
Yeah.
Or you think of Stephen Pressfield, who wrote about resistance in his book, The War of Art. He's one of my favorite guys out there. He was not successful until he was 55. He wrote for over 30 years straight without making any money. 30 years. And then boom. Now he's on the Joe Rogan podcast like once a year, you know, and on Tim Ferriss's show and stuff like that. But he's 80 years old. And so that's the thing, is like, if you continue to persevere, you take feedback from your failures, you make small iterations, but you continue to persist, you will achieve success. And that's what I've found from all these people. It's just the compound effect. It's just consistently working in the same direction, collecting feedback, making iterations and improving. That's what I've found out.
Because that's a big thing that you put in the book about compounding small wins, about how that you use these things and how to bounce back from mistakes, how to use your success buddies for accountability. You know, you really cover a lot of the areas. And one of the things I thought was, I hadn't even thought about reading, like reading hygiene, about reading style, about how to. And I think you talk about, is it like distilling decades into days by reading books, but you also talk about how to read a book. You know, that if you're not enjoying a book, you pick up, get another one. But you also talk about just generally like bookending your days and how creating it as a lifestyle habit. So how do we read then? You know, somebody's very keen to get going, picks eight books out your list on the, you know, in the book. What do we do? How do we make reading part of our lives?
I say start by reading for 15 minutes a day, maybe 15 minutes twice a day. You can, instead of trying to find time to read, you can just replace a low impact activity like scrolling on social media or binge watching Netflix or sports all weekend with reading a good book in small chunks. 15 minutes twice a day is 2.5 hours a week. If somebody is reading, let's just say, I don't know, in 2.5 hours, maybe that's a half a book a week. Here's the math that I put in the book. 15 minutes for somebody who's just starting out, that's roughly 10 pages. You do that twice a day, that's 20 pages a day. You do that 5 days a week, that's 100 pages a week. Most of these books are only 200 pages, so that's a book every other week. That's 26 books a year if you read for just 15 pages twice a day. That's not a big ask, you know, to serve your future self and change your life, read 20 to 26 books a year, just 15 minutes twice a day. Not replacing all of social media, not replacing all of Netflix or sports, but just a little bit with reading a good book. It can do wonders for you. And so I think that's how you start. And just like you mentioned before, reading hygiene, like so many people tell me, hey, Nick, I can't read. I fall asleep every time I try to read. Well, when are you reading? Oh, at the end of the day, after I put the kids to bed, after a long work day, right before I go to bed. Well, no wonder you're falling asleep. Like, you should be asleep. You know, your willpower is burned. Your energy is exhausted. You have no more. You're ready to go to bed. And then you try to read. Like, if it's that important to you, try reading when your energy is at its highest. Because like I said in the book, even the best cup of coffee in the world will taste bitter if you're in a bitter mood. Right? So don't try to read a book if you're exhausted and you're mad and you're annoyed and you just want to go to bed. Like, that's not a good outcome. Read when your energy is highest and when you're in a good headspace.
Because that's what I loved in the book, was you take away all the BS excuses. You know, it's like about the like you watch Chips while you're watching an NFL game. So you looked at how to remove the thing that led you to that bad behavior. And I love the way that you kind of just, you don't kind of ram it home. You just let it fester, and then the kind of people go, oh yeah, I see where he's going with that. And it really hits home. But after creating this big empire where you've interviewed some of the most amazing people of all time, you know, you talk about books and discussions about how they're changing our lives. Why then write a book? I know you're probably sick of this question, but what was the inspiration for this? Was it that you were not seeing the book that brought this kind of amazing range of ideas together, or getting people to understand how to use the power of books?
Yeah. So for some context for everybody listening or watching today, we have an Instagram channel that has about 150,000 followers, and it's all organic. These are real people that have grown over time because we share a new book recommendation every day on Instagram. And so I've received hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of very similar questions like, hey, Nick, how do I choose the right book? Or, hey, Nick, how do I take better notes? Hey, Nick, what do I do with my notes? How do I retain more? How do I take better action? And so over the years, I'm responding to everybody as I do, right? I'm of service to everybody. So if somebody shoots me an Instagram DM, I'll shoot them back a voice note. If somebody types me an email, I'll type back a paragraph or two. But I felt like I was underserving the same people that I wanted to serve because I wasn't able to paint the full picture for a couple of reasons. Number one, the medium with which I was responding to people didn't really give me a long form opportunity to explain things. But then number two, like, I had never actually done the dirty work of figuring out my own reading process. Like, I'd never journaled it somewhere. I just did it. I wish there was a book. I wish somebody else had documented this entire experience because it would have saved me hundreds of hours of work. But because I didn't have another resource to point people to, like if somebody says, hey, Nick, I want to learn about fasting and diets, like where should I go? I have a book for that. But when people say, how do I choose the right book and how do I take better notes? I didn't have a book for that. So I wrote it. And it took me a couple of years. I started by like observing my own behavior. What the heck does Nick Hutchison do to take action on books? And I just started to figure out pieces of the process and, you know, and organize it for everybody. So nowadays when people say, how do I do that? I just go, here's the book link. You know what I mean?
Because you have this, I don't know how you, like a good technique, it's probably a clinical way of saying it, but of like just bringing the tips and the hacks out of the author, but not in a forced way. You kind of, you know, you really just enjoy talking about books and it's a pleasure to listen to. What do you think you've learned or grown as a person by doing the podcast and by writing this book? How has this changed the past Nick to this future Nick you are now? And what do you want the actions you're doing now to be the next step? Because you talk in the book about compounding your wins, about just continuously improving yourself and your own personal transformation. How do you want to keep growing this and developing yourself through your podcast, etc.?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, Nick today versus Nick 10 years ago, I think the biggest differences are that I am more emotionally intelligent. I'm aware. I operate from a place of logic, not emotion. I've really developed the skill of empathy, like my ability to understand what somebody else is going through and then provide a solution, which is different than sympathy. Sympathy is feeling what other people feel, which I still have plenty of work to do on that. But empathy, understanding what somebody's going through and then being able to provide a solution, that brings me a lot of joy. I'm genuinely fulfilled when I help other people make progress. And so I love to be focusing on impact and helping other people. I'm a much better business person. Like, my business has grown quite a bit. The agency that I run to help authors promote their books. We've got, between full-time and part-time people now, we've got 10 people on the team, and everybody loves what they do. And it's such a fun environment to be a part of. And where I want to go next, here's the thing. I genuinely enjoy the passage of time. I love my life. I love everything that I do. I've automated, delegated, or eliminated anything on my calendar that takes energy away from me. I'm location independent. I just got married this year. We bought a house last year. Like, life is amazing and I really enjoy it. So what do I want to do in the future? Like, I want to do more of the same, just on a bigger level. I want to help more authors promote and market their books. I want to help more readers get connected with the books that are going to change their lives. I want to travel more. I want to build a family. I want to grow my team. But it's not so different than it is today. It's just a little bit more, you know?
Because I'm trying not to be selfish. There's so many things in the book that I want to just dial into, but I know I have to kind of keep this general because I think there's so much joy, pleasure, and life-changing ability in this book. And I genuinely mean that. I mean, I did read every page. And I think that I love how you talk about enjoying the passage of time, how in the book about how it's actually sometimes better just to enjoy the journey rather than having the destination. But you do mention how reality is negotiable. You know, you've even marked your body with some of these messages. What do you want people to remember from this? I mean, I would love to have you back on and really go into deep stuff and really push stuff. But what would you want people to remember about, you know, because you said you can change your life in a year by just the power of books and how reality is negotiable. We can change it. For those listening, how can we use that philosophy going forward for our future selves?
Well, and I do have a hard stop in 1 minute, so I'll be quick. One of the core messages in this book is that we are all capable of doing more, and we should do more. We should use the one life we've been given and live life to the fullest. Otherwise, we're going to end up regretting not having done more, not experimented more, not helped more people, not made more money, right? All of these things are important. Not tested ourselves physically to see what we're capable of doing. And so the message of the book is this: we're capable of doing more. Books can help you become aware of opportunities to grow, but they can also provide you the skills to do more and get to the places you should go. And so read as much as you can. Implement as much as you can. That's what life is all about. That's how I think about life. So that's a core message in Rise of the Reader. And Ian, I'm happy to come back anytime.
And how can we keep in touch with you? What's the best ways to?
The best place to go is Book Thinkers on Instagram. And we put out new content every single day. From there are links in our bio. You can find our website. You can find information about the book and all that good stuff.
Well, that's it for another week. And thank you for listening. It's now time to take what you've learned and use it to develop and enhance your life with the key points mentioned. Listen, try it, embrace it, use it, and crush it. Now's your time to hit that next level in your life. If you liked this episode, then please leave a comment on the show notes or a review of the show on your podcast platform. Everything helps evolve the show. Until next week, keep seeking the next level in your life.